Hi, everybody. Welcome to our show. This is Kindness Beyond the Veil, where we'll look at supernatural topics like ghosts, the afterlife, psychic ability, UFOs, starseeds and earth angels, magic and mysticism, but not with fear and loathing everywhere. There's positive and even loving sides to these topics, and that's the light we'll shine on for this show. This is your host, Chip Reichenthal. I was kind of thrust into these curiosities in 1979 when my best friend through childhood came to me at the moment of his death, and I had to know why. Back then, you couldn't talk about that stuff without getting a freak label, so I was pretty much on my own looking into these mysteries early on. Answers would lead to more questions and side realms like magic, stars and planets, energy and physics, and lately, starseeds and earth angels. But I found there's no good and evil in an animal kingdom, no good and evil in a plant kingdom. I've never had a negative encounter with ghosts or the dead. Now, almost 40 years into this, and there simply doesn't seem to be many looks into these fields without all the fear and loathing. Isn't there enough of that in life? Well, we're going to steer away from that, look at the good in people and these topics. Every week I get to highlight my heroes in these fields for you, introduce you to them, even if you knew all about them. There is kindness beyond the veil. I've seen a lot of it. There's answers to be found on the kinder side of things. And if there's light on the other side, we'll bring it into this side as well. And benevolence, empathy, compassion, the kinder side of science and phenomenon, the kindness beyond the veil. I'm your host, Chip Reichenthal. We're so glad you're joining us. Come on in. Welcome.
Oh, big show today, man, to coin a phrase from the great Ed Sullivan. And we indeed welcome you, beloved listeners, with open arms to Kindness Beyond the Veil. This is your host, Chip Reichenthal. We are exceptionally glad to have you with us for this show today. It could truly be the most important show we do this year. And while that may sound like hyperbole, including to our guests, it is true nonetheless. Today, we are talking about something called the Law of One. You may have heard about it. Certainly, if you listen to this program, you have. And if you haven't, you certainly will today. I'll at least preface that by saying this is something that has gradually become part of any and all the realms that we cover. Yeah. It can be thought of as something that bridges spirituality and religion together, if we must put it that way. But it's not seen as a religion. And making the Law of One some type of cult thing would be doing it a great disservice. We've spent the last 6 out of 7 shows here talking frankly about UFOs and contactee experiences with extraterrestrial or non-human intelligences. And we return to our paranormal roots for the next couple of weeks. But this here show is the last of our Out of This World series here, 6 of the last 7 shows. And we go out with a bang today. Consider that we've talked with Ray Hernandez from the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Encounters, what they call the FREE Foundation, F-R-E-E for short. They've done the most extensive survey of contactee experiences ever made, with thousands of people from all around the world, from all walks of life, all belief systems, all jobs, were able to convey their subjective experiences as well as objective ones for that survey, and amazingly discovered that nearly 3/4 of all surveyed relayed their experiences as positive, kind, healing. They came out of it more spiritual. Many had been given rare knowledge of the cosmos, the Akashic record, mathematics or physics beyond our current understanding. And all of those surveyed that relayed their encounters as negative, traumatic, helpless, came to only 7% of all surveyed. Yet those are the ones we tend to hear about the most. Not here. And that episode was also built as our most important of the year, just like today's episode is, and I stand by both of them on that. We've also spoken with the delightful Charmaine de Rosario Sage, a self-confessed human extraterrestrial hybrid who suffered through many abductions, even forced into a breeder program, but is now helping others who have endured similar experiences in order to heal them, and that's beautiful. Andrea Perrin joined us to talk of her new book. Now, she's been at the center of the paranormal realm for years, being the eldest daughter that grew up in the home featured in the film The Conjuring. But her new book called A Wonder to Behold, which is fantastic, by the way. Oh, I so highly recommend that book. And it's all about extraterrestrial contact and even ways you can do it, should you wish, to open that gate. And think for a moment how remarkable that is. We talked with Charles Michael Beaver, alias Mike Beaver, a contactee who's worked in IT for some of the most tender security agencies in our federal government to see what the truth was to him. And it really doesn't vary from any of the other guests. And last week, we spoke with Mary Rodwell, who's done thousands of hypnotic regressions for people who had contactee experiences, but memory loss that she retrieved for them. She also worked with starseeds, hybrids, experiencers, and is also an integral part of the aforementioned Free Foundation with Ray Hernandez. And this is the Pièce de Résistance today, to talk with the two directors of LLResearch.org. And you can find that online, but it's L/LResearch.org, L/LResearch.org. You can look it up while we talk to these gentlemen. That now, this is the organization that published the RAW materials, R-A, RAW materials, which you can readily access through LLResearch.org, L/LResearch.org, that covers explicitly a series of channeling sessions that took place from 1981 through 1984 with an entity known as Ra. And Ra was indeed the Egyptian sun god, but more than that, as he was here in that capacity for only so long, and is really not like a person, but a sixth density principle from a confederation of planets. And that makes perfect sense to me. Some of you will have to reframe your belief systems just so you can hear this, because it's really important stuff. But this confederation of planets, part of a group representing countless extraterrestrial civilizations whose way of life is the law of one. And the LL in the name LL Research stands for love and light, something we aim to stand for here on Kindness Beyond the Veil. And the two gentlemen with us today are Gary Bean and Austin Bridges. They are the directors of LLResearch.org, L/research.org. The book, The Raw Materials, is just part of many books, papers, and research available at LLResearch.org. And even though these channelings took place over 30 years ago, this material is becoming more and more prevalent in the current day and age. And we'll all find out why that is together, beloved listeners. If there was ever a show that inspires food for thought, is indeed this show today. So you're in for a real treat, and we're so glad you're with us for this one. We remind you this here show, Kindness Beyond the Veil, runs on two networks. Going by days of the week, we are heard proudly every Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, 7 to 9 Eastern, on the great WCET.fm. Every Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, you can hear us at LateNightInTheMidlands.com. Also, Wednesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, same time slot every Wednesday on WCET.FM at LateNightInTheMidlands.com, and also on WCET.FM, also at 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern every Tuesday and Thursday. I co-host a show. It's now a hit show called The Supernatural Realm with the great Tim Roxbury hosting. And Timmy finds the most phenomenal guests. It's a gift, really, and no, I'm not jealous. And Tim Roxbury is also producer of this here show, which is awesome. So a big shout out to the great Tim Roxbury with lots of love. And Supernatural Realm runs live every Tuesday and Thursday from, wait for it, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on WCET.FM at LateNightInTheMidlands.com. Plus, Kindness Beyond the Veil is proudly heard every Saturday afternoon on the weekend from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Saturdays on United Public Radio Network. It's formerly the UFO Paranormal Network, United Public Radio now. Every Saturday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern, you can find us at UPRNTalkRadio.com. Archives of our show, likely best accessed, at least at the moment, at UPRNTalkRadio.com in their archives section. They take very good care of us. I often post us on YouTube as well. And we're on Facebook on the Kindness Beyond the Veil Facebook page, where we would love for you to like us on Facebook. And you can find me at Chip Reichenthal on Facebook as well. Plus, you can find my absolute delight right here, right now, today, with our honored guests, Gary Bean and Austin Bridges, directors of LLResearch.org. That is to find at L/LResearch.org online. We'll bring them on in just a moment. First, a couple of brief thoughts that may help set the stage for these two wonderful gentlemen. And we begin in the year 1962. 1962. The top songs of that year included Bobby Vinton's Roses Are Red, My Love, Violets Are Blue, Little Eve's The Locomotion, or Johnny Angel by Shelley Fabre. The Cuban Missile Crisis was impacting millions in the U.S. and the Soviet Union, and a magical man named Don Elkins was coming into his own, already a professor. Very ahead of his time, especially for 1962, mind you. Don Elkins had a great interest in the paranormal, which over the years he had collected a great knowledge of, but shifted his main interest to UFOs and extraterrestrial contact. 1962, man. He had workshops for meditation. It's choking me up. Which then morphed into teaching people how to channel. Have them do channeling to see what sort of energies or entities or beings would make themselves known through channeling. Really fascinating process. And there was a young woman named Carla Ruckert who began attending those sessions in 1962, though only a mild interest at that time in channeling. But in 1970, Don Elkins hired Carla Ruckert as a research assistant to look into paranormal and extraterrestrial contact or channeling. And by 1974, most of the gifted channelers they had moved out of the Lexington, Kentucky area where they were. And then really by 1974, it was Carla Ruckert that took over the channeling for them, became extremely gifted over the years. And her primary entity she communicated with through channeling was named Hatan, a fourth density entity. The fourth density here represents love. Yeah. It's a step above self-awareness. In 1980, Don Elkins and Carla Ruckert started their own nonprofit organization in 1980 called LL Research. And as Carla refined her skills, she incorporated the Christ energy into her channeling. Very religious young woman. She wanted to enhance it by bringing the Christ energy into her channeling. Began communicating with a sixth density being named Ra. And ironically, she wasn't entirely comfortable with that, since she thought something named after an Egyptian sun god had little to do with Christ energy. And yet, these channelings with Ra are the reason we are here today, in 2019. These channelings lasted from 1981 through 1984, expressly. And beyond that, regardless of which entity made contact through channeling, the message was built upon the law of one. Think of it this way, even though it may be slightly inaccurate to say, but it may make sense. But if there was a main belief system among extraterrestrials spanning through this solar system, this galaxy, and beyond, this may very well be the one. And it's really been catching on throughout the metaphysical, spirituality, and ascension realms today. The paranormal, the ufology, and contactee realms today. Even the supernatural. And it really doesn't stray far from many organized religions or even science and physics. We all come from the same things. That single point they call the singularity, perhaps, that became all stars, planets, galaxies, all life, all energy, vibration, and frequency, all life forms everywhere, all made of the same things, all a representative of their creator, whether that be the singularity or the empty space that spawned it, designed by an infinite intelligence, all united by that. And in it all, there really are no polarities, no dualities, because good and bad, life and death, masculine and feminine, all come from it, all part of a whole picture that speaks to this highest realm of this infinite intelligence, that of love, and even higher, that of unity. You connect yourself to this unity, to the pulse, the energy, the intelligence of all things, you reach a higher density here. Make this world better. Make all things better. But the main choice is, do we go service to self or service to others? They've come here, these energies, through Carla Ruckert to encourage service to others while we remain in this lifetime, to live better, to die better, to harvest better thereafter. Carla Ruckert was here for us until she passed in 2015. April 1st, so we're almost at her anniversary of her passing. Her loving husband, Jim McCarty, is here to pass her legacy on with the greatest love. Also through channeling, and would have been here today, Jim McCarty, but he's nursing a sick friend, which speaks very highly to the integrity of Jim McCarty. Don Elkins also passed away. And to highlight, improve upon, and pass on the legacy of these magical people are two men who found themselves fated, if you will, so drawn to the work of these folks that they are and have been the backbone now, the directors of LL Research at l/lresearch.org. And they are here with us today. So please, ladies and gentlemen, give a very warm welcome to Gary Bean and Austin Bridges, the directors of LL Research, to Kindness Beyond the Veil. Hello, Gary, and hello, Austin. We welcome you both to Kindness Beyond the Veil. How are you doing today?
Hello, Chip. Hello, Tim. Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for staying awake through all that.
Doing great. I don't think we've ever gotten such a grand introduction before. That was amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting these two guys you're describing.
Yeah, right? Yeah, me too, man. Yeah, they're my best friends. They don't even know it yet. You know? But they are now. And I will say this out loud, just so everybody gets it. This resonates with me deeply. All right. Look, I have this show, you know, and it really talks about benevolent things that can happen even in the darkest of places. You know, there is love to be found everywhere. And there's so much fear-mongering in media. And it seems like this service to self kind of enslavement that the Law One talks about, the reason that Ra was here and the time period that he was here and left, you know, because they misinterpreted this beautiful message and made it to the power hungry, you know, to the elite, to ultimately enslave the masses with fear. And, you know, for this program, this is a soft place to land for people. You know, we can show them that there is less to fear in life than they think. You know, it's easy to take these mysteries, and because they're unknown, we fear them. But if you look at them with the lens of fascination, beautiful things happen, you know. It's my life purpose, I think, to try to instill, you know, to show the love-based side of life, the love-based side of death, the love-based side of afterlife, the love-based side of the things that happen beyond these three dimensions that we walk through. And this is a perfect time period because this is a month where the 3D world may kind of suck for people, but the veil is thin, so the 4 or 5D world can be great. And, you know, there is this thing about 5D, the five dimension, the fifth dimension living, if you will. That's part of my ascension process, is to reach that. It's a kind of a scary place to be because weird things happen, you know. They're great, but they're unsettling at the same time. Do you think, and here's an odd first question, but because the 5D has become such a thing in metaphysics and spirituality and even leaking into the UFO and paranormal realm, that you can compare it to a fifth density? That's an odd question. I don't even know if you can answer that. But at least based on these works, because fourth density to me and fifth density, the way they explain it, and I'll ask you to explain what each density means, it's kind of parallel. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Are you asking if the next evolutionary stage for humanity can rightfully be called a 5D world?
Well, no, I can't say that because at least in the works that I've read, we're entering into, planetary-wise, a fourth density kind of energy. That's right. Why everybody feels more now, why people are more sensitive to things, which either scares the crap out of them or allows them to have intuition to see beyond the three-dimensional world, you know. So, no, it would be inaccurate to say that. But they hang this 5D plate out there. I don't even know what the fifth density is, honestly. I know the fourth density is love, the sixth is unity. What is the fifth density, and could it, do you think, even compared to what they're calling 5D now? I guess probably not based on your early answer, but it still begs the question. I'll throw that to Gary first and then Austin, I guess.
Yeah, I'll take a first crack at it, and then I would appreciate hearing Austin's thoughts. And let me say, too, really I'm riding on your energy. You're a great storyteller, and you're very poetic. And by comparison, I'm going to feel a little bit more dry and may stumble with my words a little bit because I don't have the radio personality that you do. But that out of the way.
Sound great so far, man. Could have fooled me.
Rod describes that humanity is on the cusp of a global transformation into a new density, which for all intents and purposes is a new reality, really. And that density Rod calls the fourth density. They say we've been in the third density for 75,000 or so years.
Oh, eons, yeah.
Reaching the end of that cycle, the end of human history as we know it. And the next density is characterized by love and understanding. The two polarities, service to others and service to self, will go their separate ways. And this planet, planet Earth, will become home to the positive polarity, which is service to others. And there's lots of fascinating things we could discuss about the nature of fourth density, but to stick to your question about the fifth density. So in Ra's cosmology, there are seven densities inside of an octave, where the eighth density is also the first density of the next octave, like the sequence of a musical scale. Yeah. So after the fourth density comes the fifth density. Ra says in that density of evolution, those entities study the ways of wisdom, whereas fourth density is a study of love, fifth density is a study of wisdom, and fifth follows fourth in sequence. Austin may remember the number, but the fourth density apparently is, you know, so many X number of millions of years. So Earth is moving into a fourth density experience from Ra's perspective. Austin, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that's exactly as I would describe how Ra says it. To talk a little bit about the question of whether or not it can be equated to 5D, it's funny that you ask that first because we actually just got an email not too long ago asking that exact question.
And see, we're symbiotic, see? So yeah. We can be best friends after all.
My response, and I thought about this a lot, my response to that is generally that this sort of information that we're working with, the channeled information or just general metaphysical information, it can be kind of hard to find a very strict scientific way of approaching it and a very strict terminology. It seems like there can always be a lot of people talking about the same thing but using different terms, or maybe talking about different things while using the same term. And so I think it's totally possible that what one person understands as 5D, being the next stage of our human evolution, could be what Ra refers to as the fourth density. But Ra uses like these very specific terms, and it's all very internally consistent within the law of one material.
And it also kind of interprets the way we think as different, you know, a lot of distortions, if you will, that because this energy was here at one point, albeit a long time ago, but seems to have an understanding of how we treat polarities, dualities, emotions and such, and ask questions with that in mind, which they no longer regard. So it's kind of an interesting back and forth on that. You know, I've obviously read a lot of this. We got to give Maffy Moose on YouTube a shout out because, you know, they put audio to all the Ra sessions, you know, and then it takes a lot of work. I don't know if you're familiar with Maffy Moose or not, but that's, you know, that's my kind of happy place on YouTube because it's the Ra material, you know.
Yeah, that user who goes by the name Matthew Moose, I don't think we know who he or she is, but they took, to explain, they took the text of the Law of One Material and ran it through a computer reading program. And then posted it all to YouTube.
Yeah, and it's interesting how it mispronounces words every once in a while. I just, you know, sometimes as an English guy, you know, I kind of get a kick out of that, oddly enough. I'll be okay, though, don't you worry about me. But, now, Ra, if I believe correctly, was at one time the sun god in Egypt, but I think they came here as incarnates, as people, if you will, brothers and sisters, not as some god or some different energy. and at the same time thought it was the time to really bring the Law of One to humanity here on Earth. And ultimately it got distorted into people that wanted power. So they used it in the service to self mode and used it as corruptly as possible, even though all things are equal. There's no such thing. But the disappointment pulled them away from here. And it's a sixth density energy, if you will, who says that there are many travelers that come to us. And look, I'm sure we have a lot of listeners that may start having some sort of contactee experiences out of the blue, or even things like angels or divinities or things of that nature. Even some ghosts, I guess, would qualify, but there's still this these dimensions that come beyond the dimensions we currently understand. So, and I think in their model, there's an infinite amount of dimensions, perhaps. But they best define things as we understand life and living and growing to the next level and densities. So if you can explain what the first density and the second density, third density is, we've talked about the fourth and the fifth and the sixth. What are the first, second, and third to help explain, you know, our understanding of life in the sense that we are equal to every living thing here?
I'll take a crack at the first three, and then Austin, if you want to take four through six, we'll divvy up the work here.
Sure.
With another disclaimer that we are passionate students about this philosophy, but we are by no means the final word on it. We always encourage people to go directly to the text to make study of it themselves.
Everybody can get their own interpretation of it, I guess. But you are directors of the OL research, so I mean you rank in our book here. So we hold you up high, even though you're very humble. You know, I'm humble, too. I'm great at humility, and I'm one of the best humble people there are. I digress. <so. laughs>
I was getting that impression. So Ross says that in the infinite universe and through space and time and through planets and stars and galaxies and solar systems, that there's only really one story happening, and that is the story of the Creator knowing itself. and all the entities that exist in the universe on any level of consciousness, whether a rock or a human or an angel or physical or non-physical, in whatever dimension, whatever plane of existence, each entity is on a return journey to the Creator, to discovering the self as the Creator, to discovering the underlying unity of all things. So, Ross says that this story and this journey unfolds through an evolutionary curriculum of densities. And density, the word density is a term that's pretty specific to Ross cosmology. It has it is a synonym to dimension, but it has a more specific meaning that we can explore later. Mm-hmm. But suffice it to say, Ross says that there are seven densities, as I was describing before, in an octave. And consciousness progresses from density one to two to three and so forth, becoming more self-aware, more complex at each evolutionary stage. So you had asked, what are the seven densities? And to give you a rudimentary picture of it, obviously the Law of One itself will be a lot deeper than what we can convey. But Ra says that the first density is composed of, I guess, what we would call the elements: earth, air, fire, and wind. I think I doubled up on one. Earth, water, thank you.
Water,
earth, wind,
yeah.
Fire, and water, yeah. And through processes that aren't entirely clear to me, these four interact in a sort of timelessness, teaching one another, and space and time unfold out of this interaction, and somehow there is a sentience there or a learning. And as that level of first density consciousness coalesces and moves, or rather, let me say, progresses forward and is ready to graduate to the next stage of evolution, then that level of consciousness becomes a second density consciousness. And second density becomes easier to speak about. It ranges on the lower end from the most basic primitive unicellular life on planet Earth. I presume like bacteria would be at the low end of second density, or certain microbes. And as
I'm going to tell bacteria you said that about them, by the way. But,
yeah. No disrespect to bacteria. They're ahead of fire, earth, and wind and water.
Yeah, to remember the elements, I think of a disco band that's thirsty, you know? Earth, Wind, and Fire needed some water because they played a show. That's how I remember. That's my mnemonic device.
They were ahead of their time. So as the consciousness evolves through second density, it becomes more complex, more able to move. It is characterized by movement, and it develops a body and a mind, and it grows into... plants are second density creatures, and animals are second density creatures. And obviously one can look at both plants and animals and see a spectrum of intelligence there, with greater adaptability and greater awareness and ability to interact with and relate to its environment. And those entities, I'm about to wrap it up here and I get to third density. Sorry, this is longer than I anticipated. So as those of second density have successfully learned the lessons of that density, they activate what Ra calls the spirit complex. They become mind/body/spirit, this indivisible whole that consists of a mind and a body and a spirit. And the awakening of the spirit is synonymous with the awakening of self-awareness, or what we know of as self-consciousness. So... they graduate the second density and then move into third density. And to see third density, one need only to look at the human sphere. We are presently in the third density, and I'll wrap this up by saying the whole function of third density, according to Ra's testimony about the universe and these other confederation sources, is to make a choice, one choice that is expressed throughout the lifetime, of polarity. One biases their consciousness towards service to others, which is the positive path, the path of radiance and love and recognizing the creator in other and self, or service to self, which is the negative path, the path of darkness, which is attempts to manipulate, exploit, subjugate, enslave, and control others for the benefit of the self. And both paths are viable. And this experience of third density is designed to facilitate the making of that choice. And sorry for the long answer, Austin. What did you have to say about 4 through 6?
We like long answers here, actually. You know, we've got 2 hours. So
I'm in the right place then.
Yeah, you're in the right place. And made for radio, by the way.
So you get out of the third density. Once we learn those lessons of self-awareness and make the choice, we enter the fourth density of love. And for positive beings like us, it's easy to understand. It's love of others. Service to others is the path that we chose. But it's also available to the service to self entities, like Gary was saying. Their density of love is sort of an intense love of self, where that love is impacted in on the self rather than radiated outwards like we would understand. But
like unconditional acceptance of ourselves, and having no polarity or dualities helps that even further, I must say, at least from my interpretation of it, because we've been encouraging people to be more forgiving of their quirks, or you know, the things that they stick on with I could have done this, I would have, I wish I would have done, you know, all that stuff, or the more. You think, okay, well, you know, nobody's perfect, but you know, we can be the best self that we have. You know, we can be more loving and accepting. We can spoil ourselves a little bit, you know. Yeah, be a little narcissistic so you can be more accepting if that's what it takes, you know. But it works that way. There's healing in that. There's progress in that. There is access to higher vibrational living through that, You know?
Yeah, like as a short detour, what you're talking about, the service to others and service to self terminology can sometimes trip people up because it almost sounds like in the service to others path, there's an exclusion of the self. Mm. Whereas, in my view anyways, service to others is a self-inclusive service where we love everything, including ourselves, whereas the service to self is loving the self at the exclusion of all other. And so the service to others I view as that sort of non-dual polarity, if you will. Okay. So in Fourth Density, that's what we are attempting to do is crystallize that love, and we're striving towards the fifth density of wisdom, otherwise known as light, is what Ra calls it. Mm-hmm. And so you graduate from the fourth density of love to the fifth density of wisdom, and you learn those lessons of wisdom. And continuing on, the sixth density is sort of a combination, a balancing density between love and light that Ra calls the density of unity. And it's in the sixth density that the two polarities, service to others and service to self, sort of unify, where the service to self polarity can no longer see the self as exclusive to others. And they essentially release their polarity. The positive beings also release their polarity, but they've always been striving towards unity, and so it's an easier task to release that positive polarity. Whereas a service to self entities, they struggle a bit to release their polarity when getting to the density of unity, because unity is sort of what they have been excluding this entire time.
Right. And so, you know, it fits in, it parallels, really, the people on the path to ascension. Because, I mean, 5D is a way to describe a crystalline state, if you will, where our DNA is actually improving, you know, through meditation and through this. I mean, we're doing the hard work, but the rewards are extraordinary. But the thing is, the closer you get to this ascension, the further from ego self you are. So, you know, material things don't matter as much. People's opinion of you don't matter, how you look to others, you know, all that kind of goes by the wayside, and it really becomes kind of this higher state altogether, where it's not about the self. It's about what I can do to impact or heal others, you know, to have some sort of positive influence to take this world to a more loving place, because I think that's the path, you know. You mentioned crystals briefly, so I wanted to hang on that for a moment and ask you guys, because I noticed in the Ra, when a lot of the things that Ra talks about, and Ra doesn't see himself as, I mean, a lot of people on this plane that he's talking about, sixth or seventh density and beyond, is they don't even think of themselves with names, you know? And sometimes they have to create names in order to talk to people because people are very name conscious, you know, but the identity has gotten to such a point where they're just, it goes back to the 1600s meditation that says no man is an island, you know, we are our community, you know, and it's easier to pass this law of one on collectively than individually. And that's really kind of a process. But it really parallels what all the ascension people are talking about, the metaphysical healers talk about, shaman talk about, you know, and it goes to this higher state. We have all this higher vibrational energy available to us thanks to our solar system really going into a higher energy area of the galaxy now. We're getting pounded by solar flares and solar winds and solar particles. Boom. But in that is a higher state that is available to us should we decide to take it, and as long as we know it's there. And it goes really along the lines of what Ra is saying about the densities and how we can take ourselves to the highest density possible. You know, but he mentioned crystals, and I think they use crystals for things. And I believe in the original channelings with Carla, they use crystals on her. I could be wrong about that. But they are very crystal conscious, and they use crystals a lot. So it begs the question, you guys now being a very involved part of LL research, do you do anything with crystals, and are there any specific crystals that would be highlighted? Yeah. Or did that throw you off?
No, I don't want to be the first to apply every time.
I mentioned the idea of crystallization, which is a term Ra uses a lot. And it's sort of a metaphor and not directly referring to crystals themselves. Oh. They did talk about crystals in the Law of One a little bit, but from my understanding, the group, Don Carla and Jim, they didn't really explore that route a whole lot. And to speak for myself, I really appreciate crystals. I do believe in the powers and abilities that crystals have, but
store information, and they can store your soul information. You know, they collect all sorts of things. They can be beacons to communicate with these interdimensional realms, you know.
Yeah, no, the only thing is, like, I personally have never been able to tune into that. It's just a shortcoming. I've always been a lot more of a plant person myself.
Oh,
I can
okay.
really tune into plants.
No, that makes
really
sense
sort of
to me.
Feel plants.
I do that too now, you know, because I know that's possible. Mm-hmm. I like that there are some videos out there, mostly from people in Japan, God bless them, you know, that talk to plants. They can get plants to enunciate the letters of their alphabet, you know, or water. And water has memory, you know, and it saves it molecularly. Everything that's ever touched water, every place it's ever been, it knows. And the rocks are alive. And I learned that from Ra, too. Even mentioning the pyramids, using a unity energy from this sixth density, where they are so connected to everything that they can even ask the rock to form these pyramids, you know. I'm going to do that someday. Maybe not a pyramid, but, you know, maybe I'll build a can of Red Bull or something because, you know, I'm a Red Bull guy. They should sponsor the show. They really should. They have enthusiasts. But you know what I mean. It's just, and I understand the crystals, you know. People in the ascension process do talk about something called crystalline, which is kind of parallel to what Ra talks about. Because there is this belief that we can train ourselves, every cell in our body, down to the DNA, to restructure this DNA to either 12-strand or crystalline, where there are more crystal in your body, even on a cellular level. So it makes you this fine-tuned machine, you know, that can radiate this love and light out. That's kind of parallel to what he's talking about, I guess. I'm interpolating here, crystalline, with what you said. But does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And actually, you're talking about them doing that with their bodies. Ra, when they talk about crystallized, using the phrase crystalline, they always are usually talking about our minds instead, where we become sort of very regular and dedicated in how we use our thoughts and our minds and our willpower. And if you think about the structure of physical crystals, they're very regular and they're very strong and they're very sturdy. And so when you think about that as applied to the mind, a very regular and sturdy mind is able to serve better and able to tune in better to energies. And the body and the mind have correlations in how they express themselves. So crystallizing your body would necessarily be also crystallizing your mind, because that takes a lot of willpower and dedication.
Yeah, because he mentioned, and I mentioned it earlier, but I want to go back to it, that, you know, a lot of questions to this Ra, especially early on, were about traveling, you know, things that intelligences that may have come here on crafts, you know, physically, you know, the grays, if you will, and all these kinds of things that have been seen and have been physically touched or experienced physically touched by contactees. A lot of questions regarding that. But they really said that it's the power of thought that is the thing that if we understand it, because we have a very poor understanding of our own ability, you know. The power of our intent is beyond anything that any science or psychology or medicine believes, but it's beyond that. And he's talking about using thought to travel. They could use thought even to build physically, have crafts to travel in and do it all by thought. And a lot of travel is interdimensional. So any contact with people may not be seen directly, but may be sensed intuitively, or maybe seen in the third eye rather than physically, and that's all possible. That's kind of what he was saying, right? The power of thought using this unity, if you could tune in to everything, the plants, the water, the rocks, every living thing, you know, every physical thing, every non-physical thing, all comes from the same thing, really. All comes from the this infinite intelligence. And if you can tune into that, then the power of our thought could take us even further if we tried this or if we used this. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, Rod describes in the higher densities that they learn the ability to use light like we would a pen.
Okay.
And with those abilities comes the possibility of exactly what you're describing, traveling by thought alone. They indicate that these sorts of abilities are not precisely the goal of our present experience of third density, and are I'm not sure to what extent they may be possible here in third density, but they do give an interesting statement. Ross says that the entity, and this is, I'm quoting them, the entity who penetrates intelligent infinity is basically capable of walking the universe with unfettered tread. They don't elaborate on what precisely they mean by unfettered tread, but this, to my understanding, and this is just interpretation, but this, to my understanding, is Buddha consciousness, you know, okay. Full awakening, full dissolution of the separate self. Mm-hmm. And at that level of consciousness, there are no remaining boundaries.
There are no limits, especially right. if you can work with light. And if you think of light, I mean, you take a photon. A photon can travel the entire length of the universe in no time. For the light, it's no time at all because it's going at the speed of light. You know, if it was slower, there would be a time structure to it. If it was faster, it would probably go backwards in time. But it, you know, if you can become the light, then you can go anywhere. You know, that's the unfettered thing. To me, I'm working on that. You know, one of these days, guys, I'm going to show you. You'll say, oh my God, that chip, what a nutball, you know. But that's what I'm shooting for. Because, look, they talk about it in the ascension process, too. I think, look, people that are religious, okay. And the thing about organized religion to me is, you know, if you have faith, I mean, that's wonderful. God bless you for it. You know, because these people are looking to be an image of their creator, all of them, you know. But the thing is, and he says specifically, he doesn't want this law of one to be seen as any kind of religion. He doesn't want cults starting, or he doesn't want people like, you know, I mean, if Gary Bean goes to Utah and starts his own little thing there, I don't think Ra would be happy with that. Is that safe to say he does not want this thing to be seen as religion? Is that correct? Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, the one feature that absolutely permeates every corner of the Law of One philosophy is a radical respect for the authority of the self to author their own journey. Mm-hmm. And ultimately create their own reality. I don't mean create by just thinking something into being and then, wow, that's, you know, that's going to be manifested. But I mean, each of us is on a journey, and it is our sacred right to exercise our own free will. And there's a deep respect for that free will within the philosophy. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, the philosophy has many reminders to the self that you are the creator. And the truth that you are seeking is who you really are. It's not contained in the pages of any book. Truth, in fact, cannot be articulated in words. It's how the Tao Te Ching opens. So what was I saying?
So you guys have a little theology going on there. Well, I think, you know, it's like saying, it's like what I was going to say but did not mention is... It's wonderful that you have faith, especially in like an organized religion, but it really speaks to what you do with that faith. I see a lot of people use passages to excuse abuse, you know, beatings, really bad behavior. I've seen people that work to be like the divinity and be as pure and truthful as they can be, you know. So it's not that you have faith, it's what you do with it. And that's kind of what this is saying in a way, because of our free will.
Yeah, it's reminding the self that this is only, there's something from Buddhism that I've really liked that said that the Buddhist teachings are just a raft to get you to the other shore. And once on the other shore of actual self-realization, then the raft can be discarded. So it's a very useful raft that I find no end to its utility. But it does describe that for the adept in particular, the seeker that is seeking to move beyond the illusion, that faith plays a central role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really speaks to ultimately service to self or service to others. Just wanted to remind the listeners real quickly, we have today Gary Bean and Austin Bridges, the directors of LLresearch.org. You can find it online as L/LResearch.org for the raw materials, which is what we're talking about, Ra, R-A, as in like the Egyptian sun god, but actually it expresses something that is part of a collective, a confederacy of planets, whatever they call it, this is several different civilizations, several different beings from several different planetary systems, whether solar system, this galaxy, or galaxies beyond, that kind of really have this as a way of life, you know? And they are, they're at a higher level than us. They've been around longer and they've experienced the kind of things that we have here. Yeah. You know, I mean, any given day, somebody could set off a nuclear armament and, you know, that's it. But at the same time, we can take all that and say, you know what? I'm not going to be scared anymore. I'm tired of being told what to do. I'm going to be the best self that I can be. I'm going to leave a legacy behind that I can be proud of. I am going to fight for love, for light, to set a better example to those that survive me so they can set a better example. And eventually we can become more of a unified people, accepting everybody for whatever, but it's all part of this thing. Now, here's something I wanted to ask you all about. I guess they call it harvesting. To me, and I'll put it to you as somebody who's worked with talking to dead people for years, you know, the thing I learned from them is, you know, ultimately, even though they were, some of them were very religious in this, that lifetime, the most recent one, you know, they come away from it in the afterlife as this was just one of a series of lifetimes. I've been a man, I've been a woman, I've been a bacterium, I've been a fungus, I've been a duck, I've been a flower, you know, but each lifetime gets us closer to the ultimate wisdom of, I guess, what an old soul has. See, I'm an old soul. I want to go home. I think this is probably my final lifetime, at least here. And I think that's why all these light beings are, you know, arriving. I could be dead wrong on that, but it's a wonderful place to be, you know, especially if life sucks, you can always have that. But it seems that in these harvestings, each lifetime is really for a purpose. It's to learn a certain thing. It could be to learn grief or loneliness or love or forgiveness, you know, but it's something. Each lifetime has a purpose regardless of what kind of life system we are, you know, plant, animal, human, rock, you know, whatever. Kind of what he's meaning when he's talking about harvesting, right? It kind of goes along with the same lines that I've learned from talking to people in the afterlife.
Yeah, there are a couple of different sort of ideas that I think you're touching on here. That idea of reincarnation and the purpose behind reincarnation, I personally think is one of the most empowering spiritual perspectives because it mm-hmm. helps give context to whatever we're experiencing in our lives. And that is exactly how Ra describes the process of evolution, is we take on incarnations with certain patterns and certain lessons to learn that will help us then refine our soul, our mind-body-spirit complex, as Rob puts it, and learn these lessons that will then get us closer and closer back to returning to the Creator. And that's sort of the entire point of this whole journey, is to learn these lessons, experience life, and then eventually bring all of that experience back to the Creator. And you could say that that experience is essentially harvested by the self in between incarnations, through incarnations. But then Ra also talks about a larger concept of harvest that happens sort of between the densities, mm-hmm. where you basically get to the point where you're ready to take the next leap. And there is sort of Ra describes it as a quantum leap between the densities, where there's such a drastic difference of experience. And it sort of depends on your lifetimes up to that point, whether or not you've been able to learn the right lessons, whether you have utilized your catalyst, as Ra calls it, your life experiences, to open up to the self and grow closer to the Creator. And if you have, then once you get to that barrier, you are then harvested to the next density. And if you haven't essentially made it to that barrier, then it's not a problem, because, you know, we have an infinite universe eternity to keep on trying and keep on going. And if somebody wants to continue learning third density lessons, or if they haven't quite gotten there, then they just keep going until they make it, and they will eventually be harvested to the next density.
That's going to be me. You wait and see. That's why we're going to be best friends. Because in the next life, we're hanging out, you know, but we're going to be in a different place on a different density. Trust me on this. Now, I got a question from the chat room here, and that I'm going to mispronounce, but maybe you guys know. You're more theological and methodologist. You know what I mean. You're smarter than me. Is it similar to Lao Tzu and the Tao Te Ching? I've never heard of these things myself. I don't know if you guys have them. If you haven't, that's all right. We're best friends anyway. Was I even close on that?
Yeah, I've heard it with a D and a T, but you won't have critics here. We're not experts on really any subject, actually. We'll just be clear on that point. But is it similar? Yeah, I've read the Tao Te Ching, and the way that Lao Tzu navigates paradox, I think, is indicative of unity, really. I think that Lao Tzu is describing essentially the non-dual essence of the Law of One. It's not getting into, of course, a cosmology or polarity and consciousness per se, mm-hmm. that I'm aware of. But
they're on the right track, though, it sounds like.
They're talking about what is really a feature of unity that manifests in various teachings and mystics throughout history. Mm-hmm. Which describes essentially the oneness of all things. And what's beautiful about the Tao Te Ching is the poetic way it tries to reconcile the illusion or the appearance of manyness, of there being many things, and a here and a there, and a before and an after, and, you know, a beginning and an end, against the ultimate and only truth, which is that all things are one.
Wow. Well, you know, for somebody who's not an expert, you're sure smarter than I am, man. That's all I got to say about that. So good for you. You know, I've seen one thing I will speak to that I do know, which is not that stuff at all, but might be related, because I'll show my ignorance, you know, good old American ignorance here. But Qigong, the guys that work with Qi energy, and that's always fascinated me, because I work with a lot of Reiki people. I work with divine healers. I work with... I know some people that can manifest this chi energy, and there's something about that chi energy where there's a purity to it, a divinity to it, where in order to access that kind of energy, which seems to allow you to be telekinetic or psychokinetic and do all sorts of different things and heal people or hurt people, you know, service to self, service to others. But the magic of that energy to me is something that kind of says the same thing that you were trying to say in this unity thing, because you have to bring yourself to such a balance in order to get that kind of energy. It's almost divine. I mean, it's magical. You know, I can heal people now with energy, but to me, it's not my energy. It comes from a higher density, perhaps. I think of it as divine energy. It's not for me, you know, it's for others. It passes through me. I'm just a vessel. See, it's kind of like this identity thing, you know, because that's all I am. I'm not a polarity. I'm not a duality. I'm all things. In order to access this energy, you have to bring yourself to a place that almost kind of expresses the point. Does that make sense to you?
It does. Ra actually refers to an intelligent energy is what they call it. And mm-hmm. I think that this intelligent energy has an infinite number of manifestations. And in its more pure form, I think it is the sorts of things you're talking about, like the mm-hmm. chi or reiki, what healers can use to heal. And they refer to it in exactly the terms that you were just talking about, that this energy doesn't come from us. We are becoming channels for this higher energy, the intelligent energy. It's sort of like a pure manifestation of the creator itself that moves mm-hmm. through us.
Yeah. It's like there are sometimes, you know, because working with dead people, you know, sometimes they're earthbound and you can cross them over, you know, but it's a process. It's not just an instantaneous thing. You have to find out why they're here, have them forgive themselves for it in order to do that. Sometimes, and I've had to, and this sounds crazy, but that's okay. I'm going to wear crazy like a badge of honor today, where I've actually had to bring Jesus Christ to them to take them into the light. And I was upset about that because here comes Jesus, right? He walks through me, takes my energy, then takes them. And I'm like, I didn't feel anything. You know, if I had Jesus Christ pass through me, why didn't I feel anything? And these guides or angels or whatever are saying, he wasn't there for you. Not about you, you know, right? And that kind of forces me to really encompass this whole unity thing, you know, because I was thinking identity for that moment, and I can't. There have been times, and, you know, I don't care how crazy this sounds, it'll resonate with you guys, because this makes so much sense to me, this law of one, these raw materials make so much sense to me. You know, you guys know the inside story of why with my guide system and all that, but there have been times when in meditations, because I do sense the plants, you know, the trees are protecting me, you know, they like me. You see a tree sometimes and you can see that every single leaf has its own identity, you know, but it's there for the group. So it's a unified thing. Plants feel the suffering of others. It's been proven, you know. Water can be healed. Water can heal. Water is the best antibiotic we have, but we have to teach the water to do that. And, you know, you realize that we work so well with the elements if you really come to understand them. Or see a flock of birds and understand that each bird has their own personality. You know, one's the pushy one, one's the social one, one's the narcissist, you know, but they're all part of this community. And they're all unified. They all fly the same way when it's time for them to go, and they know exactly where to go. I mean, there is this intelligence that lies above all of us, that holds everything together. And if you can tune into that, I'll call it a wavelength. If you can feel that you belong with everything, that you're no better, no worse, just equal, and all to be there for this intelligent, infinite energy, there is this feeling that comes with it that is bigger than I'll ever be, you know. But to be a part of that is a beautiful thing, and understanding that. Yeah, I think we're going into fourth density myself, and I think that people are starting to feel it. They're unsettled right now. There are a lot of service to self messages out there, you know, that are fear oriented, that keep us enslaved in a certain way, to be the sheep for whatever's going on, to either love our leader or hate our leader, love people who love our leader and hate people who hate our leader. Yeah, all this stuff. But what I'm seeing, especially doing a show like this, and you guys are probably seeing it too with your work, and I wanted to ask you, as kind of a personal thing, but you start to see it. You're starting to see it now. The fact that this stuff was really done, you know, in the early 80s, you know, I was alive back then. But it's resonating here in 2019. This seems to be more the time for it than it was in the early 80s, because it makes sense to people. People are starting to look up. They're starting to look for things that show them, yes, there is reason to hope. Yes, there is reason to love. Yes, there is reason not to fear things. Yes, there's reasons to forgive, be benevolent, be compassionate. You know, if you don't like your own life, look to healing other people. Do it in some way that brings healing to you. It's an indirect but beautiful thing. And it brings you to a higher place, and the karma straightens itself out and things are going, you know, pretty good. The service to others things brings magical, magical stuff. But people are looking up now. They're looking for that hope. They're looking for that message. And I think that law of one is about as good a message as there is out there. And it makes sense of everything, you know. It is somewhat of a religion. It is somewhat of a spirituality. It is somewhat of a being, you know, a sense of being, a new path to a better planet, to a better universe. You guys have been directors of this you've been pulled in, and I'd like your personal stories of what pulled you into LL Research here. But first, can you answer me each? Do you see the effect it's really starting to have here in 2019, where it's really catching on toward the age of Aquarius and new things? This is really the time for it. Do you sense that, or am I talking out of my ass here?
If you were, could we tell you that?
Yes, absolutely. We're best friends, don't forget.
No, I mean, if you're talking out your butt, then so are we.
Okay.
Who knows? It's possible. That's up for the listener to determine, I guess.
Out of your butt is good. That's why Taco Bell's so popular these days. Did I say that out loud? That's a good thing. I love Taco Bell. Okay, go ahead. Now I'm talking out.
I will not opine on Taco Bell at this moment. I think I would corroborate your own perception of what is transpiring. I feel there definitely seems to be an increase in spiritual seeking across the planet, as a lot of world systems no longer are serving people. And a lot of the mythology that built our present civilization seems to be unraveling to some extent. Mm-hmm. And aren't giving people the meaning and the purpose and the orientation that it formerly did. Old structures are dissolving, and in that open space or vacuum, I don't know if vacuum's a word, but in that open space, people are looking for their own answers. They're not looking to institutions, or rather, they are looking to institutions less, and embarking on a path of spirituality, which is seeking the truth for oneself. Mm-hmm. That's what I think one of the key things that distinguishes spirituality from religion is that religion, organized religion, orthodox religion, presents you with a set of truths and said, this is our dogma. We do not encourage critical thinking or questioning or finding truth outside of this body of information.
Yep.
And here
the
are
dogma.
The authorities who will interpret it for you. Whereas spirituality is characterized by finding one truth for oneself through wherever the self may find it. I personally think that there is an increase of that. And we see it, of course, in our own line of work, because we have a unique cross-section of people. But whether it's from the Law of One or there are many other good sources available on this planet that point to the light, I guess that'd be my quick answer. Austin?
Yeah, I agree 100% with everything Gary said. I think my addition would be that it seems to be related to this sort of increasing tension or polarization that we see in our society, that there's just this intense energy that's pervasive in our culture right now. And I think it's because that there is essentially this new increased energy available to us as a human race, as a planet. And a lot of people can't really grasp it. They don't understand what it is. And it's sort of energizing their own distortions and their own previous ideas of what things were. And so now what we have is sort of like this caricature of society instead of like what society used to be.
Yeah, it's becoming too painful for people because they're feeling more, because we're in a higher energy place now just by our rotation in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. It's bombarding us with energy, so people feel the fear more, they feel the anxiety more, but they also feel the love more. They also feel the benevolence more, you know, and they're saying, you know what, I've had enough of this. It's getting crammed down me. I'm tired of it. And they're starting to look to programs like LLresearch.org, online, that's L/LResearch.org, for answers, or Kindness Beyond the Veil, you know. I think we've had our listenership. I'm so proud of it, you know. I mean, I'm trying to not have an identity here. It's not an ego thing. I see the people that listen. I get to know them. You know, and they're beautiful people. They're really good-hearted, great-minded, and they want better for themselves and others, you know. And they don't want to be scared all the time. You know, they want somebody to say it's okay, and that's what you guys are saying. All right, I'm going to ask you guys a question, a weird one. All right. About organized religion, and people are probably going to, you know, hate me for this, but it's just an observation. It's not an opinion. That the most major religions that we have, let's call them the three biggies, if you will, each have an end of days, right? But each have an end of days where they're the last ones standing at the end of days. Yeah. And that just doesn't seem good for civilization as a whole, you know, to last. Does that sound crazy to you, or does that ring true at all?
I definitely think that they saw something that, you know, there's this consistent theme between the religions, that there is sort of like this next stage of human life, and it might be called the end of days. But I think one thing about organized religion is that it's so prone to distortion and controlling tendencies, mm-hmm. where even if at one point there was a truth to what was being said, it's been mishandled and misused and mistranslated. And it's gotten into the hands of people who would use it to control or to use fear as a form of slavery.
The service like to that. Self-oriented, yeah.
Right, yeah. So there is, I think, in organized religion, a pure path of seeking for those who want to find it there and who have that mm-hmm. purity of heart. I think Ra uses the terms, you have eyes to see, that there is something there in each religion for somebody to grasp onto and evolve spiritually. But organized religion just has that tendency. It has such a great potential to be distorted and used to control populations.
Yeah, one thing I never saw in the Ra materials was anything about an end of days. Never. In fact, and here's a weird question for you, and I'd like both your takes on this if I could, and it's a weird question, but it'll make sense to you, I think, because in the mind of this Ra, this sixth density principle, where the sixth density is unity, has taken love and wisdom and has gained this unity, there is really no space-time for them, you know? That makes sense to me in a weird way because, you know, I talk to people who have had contact experiences, some of my personal ones lately, which are weird, and I'm uncomfortable talking about, but they're in a different time structure than us. I've got these things that say, you know, they're here for a moment, but that's 3 weeks in my time. Or if I ask them for a name and they give me a name, it may take a week and a half for them to say it because their time structure is so different. Because they're not thinking in terms of time and space. They're not even thinking in terms of dimensions. They're thinking more in terms of densities and octaves, like Ra is. So time-space is something that they don't really think about because they've gone beyond something like that. Does that make any sense to you all? Because that sounds what it says to me. And again, I could be wrong.
Chip, it makes a lot of sense. Okay. It actually, like, the physics of space and time is way outside of our pay grade, but I could offer a really rough thought and say that space and time itself is, and I'm sure you'd agree, is an illusory construct. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the environment that the one manifests in order to create a I wanted to say space. In order, let's call it a schoolroom, an environment through which individual souls can move and experience and learn and grow and so forth. And our understanding from the law of one is that space and time themselves change based on the density of experience. So space and time and fourth density are fundamentally different experiences than they are here. And I'll close by saying, like, you were talking about how the entities with whom you've received some contact have a different sense of space and time. It was very true for Ra as well. In fact, they are so removed, or shall we say, distant from our own construct of space and time that they had enormous difficulty trying to use temporal terms with us. In their communication, they said it was very difficult to make that translation for that translation, because it was such essentially a foreign system to them. And they said that they were outside of our time, so they could be with us at any time. And what exactly that means?
They couldn't really tell, because it's so different for them. It's like speaking a foreign language in a different alphabet, and it takes a long time to get to know that, you know,
right.
And then you get to know the cultural language as opposed to the language in the book, you know, things like that. So yeah, the translation didn't jive, but that would make sense to all the paranormalists that are listening, you know, that deal with spirit. It's very easy in the time space warp that we know on our base level of the physics that we understand. And still, you could be talking to a spirit from 1890, or you could be talking to a living person in a time warp from 1890. You know, either is just as possible, because the construct of time is just way different than our belief system. Most people just think it's a straight line, past, present, future. That's how we live our life. It's moment to moment. You know, we can regret our past or love it. We can fear our future or embrace it. But we don't know what that is, so everything is in the moment for us. So we think of this straight line that physics just discombobbles completely, but Ra discombobbles even more. And a lot of what Ra said makes sense to me based on my experiences, you know, with ghosts and with contactee experiences. You know, time doesn't really matter. It's the communication that matters, you know? And that's what we're trying, even in paranormalists, you know? They watch the stuff on TV where they go taunting ghosts and stuff, but it's the communication. If you can have communication with something from a different dimension, whether it be a ghost or a fairy or a unicorn or an extraterrestrial, you know, you respect the communication. The fact that something is willing to reach out to you is the biggest honor in the world, and you treat it that way. It's part of really what he's talking about with this law of one. We're all equal. I'm not judging this ghost, whether he killed somebody or not. Not my position to judge. They have figures for that in their belief system, you know. But to me, they're just somebody that's reaching out. And, you know, I'll give them my hand. I'll, you know, that is a great honor. You know what I mean? So it makes sense on a paranormal level. A paranormal level, as well as a contactee level, as well as this density that we're talking about. You know where I'm going with that? Anybody?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Boy, okay, sure.
There may be a pause sometimes, because I think both of Austin and I want to give each other the space and not, you know, right in.
We're both deferential to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful thing, and I'm deferential to you, so we could have lots of dead air here. Or not, hopefully not. All right, I want to ask each of you guys, what brought you to LL Research personally? What resonated with these works or these people that are you're now directors of the organization, the LLresearch.org, L/LResearch.org, to find it online, which you should do. But you guys were drawn in. It was almost like kismet or fate, you know, that really brought you in. You know, there's something with me that I talked with you guys about, but that really resonates with me on a very personal level about this work. But you guys are working with the company now. What brought you each in? We'll go with Austin first on this.
Okay. That's out of order, but since we were just talking about how time is an illusion, I guess
that's right. There's no order here. It's all unity. We're all the same.
The story can be a lot longer or a lot shorter, depending on how many details I tell. So we'll just start with the idea that I was an atheist for a lot of my life. I was actually sort of anti-theist. I was anti-spirituality, anti-religious. I grew up with a resentment towards not just religion, but sort of spirituality in general.
I know a lot of people like that.
Yeah. That's how I spent a lot of my life until I graduated high school. I moved out. I was working a pretty, I'd say, cushy job. It was very relaxing. I didn't have a lot of responsibilities in the world, and that gave me a lot of time to think. And I did a lot of stargazing.
Hey, tell that job chips available, you know. Just saying.
Well, it was pizza delivery, so you could probably.
Oh, no kidding! All right. You know,
it's very easy for a young person to do something like that and make enough money to survive at least.
Oh, you'd love me. We always go 25%. I was in the hospitality industry, you know. So.
Oh yeah, great stuff. Yeah. So doing that, I was. It was actually out in the country. I was delivering pizza, so I was seeing these beautiful landscapes in the evening time and going home and gazing at the stars, and something just started moving inside my mind, and I didn't realize that it was a spiritual movement. It was just something moving inside, and questions coming up, basically looking out into the infinite universe and feeling that, like, infinity inside of me. And so I started looking for answers to this. And right about that time, somebody came into my life that started talking about this exact same thing.
Wow.
And, the first thing that really struck me was a quote that he shared from the comedian Bill Hicks. And I can't remember the exact quote, but it's something like, what if we are all just part of one big conscious being experiencing itself subjectively?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I always thought that maybe planets are cells or tissue or something.
Right. That really, like, I'd never thought about anything like that in my life. And that just struck me. I didn't know what to make of it, but I knew it felt significant. The other thing that really sort of broke down a wall is it's actually funny that you had Ray Hernandez on from Edgar Mitchell's Foundation.
Because, I love him. Yeah.
Dr. Edgar Mitchell was the next sort of big barrier that helped break down my my own internal walls to spirituality.
Kidding. Wow.
I can't remember what really got me into UFOs, but I always thought that UFOs were also just sort of this silly thing. Like, people didn't know what they were talking about. It was lights in the sky. They weren't significant. And if they were real, somebody would say something. And the only thing that would have made me change my mind is if there was some NASA astronaut out there talking.
Yeah, some guy walked on the moon and came back and said, hey, man, there's some stuff out there.
If one of those guys was talking about UFOs, maybe I would listen. Well, it turns out, went home, saw this video of Edgar Mitchell talking about how UFOs were real and how we needed to start paying attention to them. Wow. And turns out he's not the only one either. There are plenty of astronauts and NASA talking about this.
Yeah.
And so that just, it broke down another barrier in my mind, and it was just, it blew things wide open for me. And so I was continuing on watching videos like this, and at one point I came across a video that talked about the Law of One channeled by Ra. And I had actually heard about it previously, way earlier in my life.
Was
my
it
mom
the kid with the long
book.
Hair? Because that's the one I came across. It's a short 6-minute video. This guy with the long hair. He should work for the organization. He got me into it.
No, it was a different video. It was sort of mentioned in passing, actually. But turns out my mom talked about this when I was a kid.
Wow.
And so it just went off like a gong inside of me. I went home to my mom and I said, do you still have those books? And like, we went and got this box down off the top of the shelf, and right on top of the box are the Law of One books. And so it just immediately took a hold of me. Like, it was undeniable. There was the strongest feeling I've ever had in my life when I read these words. So there's obviously some connection. And just through being engaged with the material, I got involved with LL Research on our Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org, and started interacting with Gary a little bit. He asked me to volunteer as a moderator on the forums, and we developed a working relationship. And eventually in 2013, Carla, Jim, and Gary invited me to come work because there's more and more work to be done in the office and Gary needed a little bit of help. So I moved to Louisville in 2013 to work with them. And nice. It has been, like you were saying, it's a sort of a fate thing. Like the relationship that Gary and I have, our unique personalities and abilities, they sort of fit like puzzle pieces into this organization and with each other. And it has been sort of a serendipitous in how things have worked out.
Oh, that's beautiful. Wow, great story, man. I like it. And look, if you guys ever need a moderator when you have guests that answer one-word questions, you know, that are very short in their answers, you need somebody to fill up a lot of time, I'm available. Just Gary, go ahead, brother.
Point you in one direction and let you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Just say, Chip, how are you? That's it. That's all you
need. I will share the most important piece of information for the show. And that's that by most important, I mean not. But LL Research has a forward slash between the two L's, L slash L Research, the name of the organization for, like you were describing earlier, Love slash Light. But the URL to the website is actually llresearch.org, no forward slash. So
really?
Yeah.
That's why it's always busy when I try it.
I got to look making up. Mental note when you say that. I'm like, I got to say again. Something, then I forget about
really?
It.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, you're right. Oh, my goodness. I've been wrong all this time.
Welcome to the website.
Right? Yeah. Welcome to my world, really.
Yeah. So, yeah. Also, I wanted to highlight something said in Austin's story, and then I'll share my own. And that's that, like, he described the gong going off inside of him. And mm-hmm. There's a term for that in the Confederation philosophy, and you actually see it throughout New Age spirituality, and that's resonance. That is part of the faculty of how one knows what is true for one, in that when something strikes the self that is, you know, right for the self, then there is a resonance within the soul that says, yes, this is for you. This is your next step. Or this is some lead that could be, that could benefit from exploration. Mm-hmm. So, we get to meet so many beautiful spiritual seekers around the world, largely through email, of course, but in person as well. And everybody's story is full of these moments of resonance that open up new horizons or reveal something about the self that wasn't known before. So my story, I was raised in a very secular household, but not consciously secular. We just, like, my parents and family were not into religion or philosophy or even having those sorts of conversations or asking mm-hmm. those questions. It was just a secular world, but it was just it'd be like trying to define water for the fish. You know, that's just what I knew. And
I get that. You know, my father was Jewish and my mother was Southern Baptist. Her family disowned her for marrying a Jew boy. You know, so we didn't talk about religion much. I did the summer school once where I went to every different church or temple or whatever, mosque, to see what every faith did, you know, what every mass or whatever they called it was like, you know, just to see what everybody did, just so I could get a grasp of it. And it really wouldn't, I came away with about the same thing that you lived through, you know, even going through all that. Yeah. It was just a thing. And you find there are good people and bad people in all these faiths, you know. And it's what they do with it that counts, which means you don't have to know what the faith they are, just what they do with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and your parents are the experience that your parents had is an example of the dark side of religion, in that it can be very divisive. Mm-hmm. My parents had no religious training or background or really affiliation. They got married in a church. That was about it. And I had no experience of church growing up. But we do hear a lot of stories from people who suffered at the hand of repressive religious teaching, which is not to say that all religious teaching is repressive, but really the parents that were controlling and use religion to suppress the child's ability to think critically, really, and ask questions for oneself. But so that was my environment. And I turned 18 years old and I didn't quite know myself at the time and signed up for the Army and was scheduled to go to basic in August. This is 1998. And that summer I stumbled on a book, and this is also very common in a lot of spiritual stories, just the, you know, the stumbling upon something that, and that book for me was Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock. Have you read that book?
Wow. Seen it? I've browsed through it.
Such...
I have not read it. It's amazing.
Oh my God, yeah, such an awesome book. Graham Hancock, and it's a really thick tome. He, the short of it is that he travels the world and studies ancient cultures and mythologies, and in particular, the megalithic stone structures that they left behind on this planet that, you know, modern engineering still has trouble explaining how quite they did it. And he assembled all this evidence to point to an original civilization on Earth that preceded the historical first civilizations between the Tigris and Euphrates and the Indus Valley and Mesoamerica and so forth, said that prior to those, there was an earlier civilization that had gained some advanced technological and or spiritual understanding, and through a combination of Earth cataclysm, maybe even more, wiped itself out or got wiped out. And, you know, this obviously has echoes to the myth of Atlantis. So whether that was factually true or not, I believe it's true. But that, like, blew the lid off the top for me.
Yeah, his buddy, Andrew Collins, who's on Ancient Aliens every once in a while, we didn't even know he was on that. Timmy and I had him on Timmy's show. He was talking about a species called Denisovans that trace back 60,000 years, which is technically before the modern Homo sapiens period. But there was evidence that they had jewelry. There was evidence that they had belief in an afterlife. There was evidence of tools or evidence of all sorts of things, you know, tracing back easily 60,000 years, even some with bigger skulls than others, you know. So they probably did rituals where they put bands around their heads, you know. But it's very similar to Graham Hancock. They go out all the time. They hang out, you know.
Yeah,
like the next best thing.
There's a lot more mystery than people realize on this planet.
Yeah, and ancient cultures, can we just say it out loud? They're smart, okay? They didn't need extraterrestrials to tell them how to do things. They could figure it out on their own. They didn't have computers, but they stared into the stars all day, and they figured out stuff, you know? They were smart. Sorry, that's my rant of the day. Because people treat ancient civilizations on TV like they're morons, and that, you know, ticks me off. Pet peeve of mine. Sorry. Back to your story, Gary.
I'll refrain from riffing on that really intriguing point and continue with the story and say, so that prior to that point, my whole sense of self and worldview was inherited secondhand from, you know, family, parents, mass media, and so forth. And this blew the lid off the top. And for the first time, I realized that there was essentially so much more to life,
right?
That humanity was a species with amnesia who didn't quite know itself, and that triggered for me the search, which is the core defining characteristic of spirituality, seeking the truth for oneself. And I began to ask the big questions and to ruminate on them, and I went to basic training subsequently and returned home, and my identity was going through a death of an old one and the birth of a new, and that took some years.
Yeah.
And it's only in retrospect that I could make sense during it. It was
huge,
just a lot
change.
Of turmoil and stuff.
Yep.
So I found other sources of insight, and it was pretty quickly. That was summer 1998, and then January 2000, like right after the Y2K scare, I was just following some links online, and I stumbled on, again, session one of The Law of One. And reading Ra's words was like, I had an experience similar to what Austin described in his one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, experiences of my life. It was like the room changed, the earth tilted on its axis,
to
inflate my sense of self to the size of the earth.
Too.
But my eyes were waterfalls. I was crying, and I felt like this, I had found my philosophical home. I felt like this makes so much sense to me on a level that it continues to do so. So that set me on a path, and I that was 19 years ago. I've been studying the philosophy ever since, and I got to meet Carla and Jim.
I was going to ask you if you had a chance to meet her while she was alive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fortunately, I had the great honor of working alongside her and living with her and Jim, as did Austin as well.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Met them in 2002, and 2003, I happened to be attending one of, they were having a small event at their home, and they had wanted to form spiritual community to fulfill a vision of Don Elkins. And I just, at the time, I was just was dumb lucky enough to be sitting there. I was this 23-year-old kid with little credentials to my name, and I got invited.
Wow.
And yeah, I thought, oh my God, it's like, there's no way I get, this is everything I wanted. I had, you know, I had kind of drifted from everybody in my hometown. I was following my own lights, and I was, you know, become this, you know, hermit who was kind of meditating in his room.
Well, you become awakened, and it almost is a distance between a lot of people you've known all your life, you know? I mean, nobody in my family, you know, sees or talks to ghosts, you know? Nobody believed in that stuff till my mom died, and then my dad saw her, and he became a believer.
Yeah, it's not intentional either. It's just a conceptual barrier there.
No, it happens, you know. I think it resonates with a lot of listeners, if not all of them, you know. And we've got a beautiful listenership from around the world. I just want to interrupt you briefly and mention that on llresearch.org, with no /, I stand corrected on that, llresearch.org, you can find the raw materials, but you can bring them up. You know, they're available. In a PDF. If you have a phone or a computer that can handle a PDF, then you have access to these raw materials and lots of other books and papers and information. It's all there and it's all available. So you can read it, listeners, my beloved, and it will resonate with you. I mean, it hit me, you know, I guess over the head like a stone, you know. So, and I wasn't stoned. I'm not saying that. Yeah, at least at the time. But yeah, I mean, it did. It absolutely resonates with me too. And it makes sense. And it's not, you know, this raw entity is not talking down to people, but he is aware that we have kind of our culture or the way that we're brought up and the things that we believe in our 3D world is a distortion to this higher density that he comes from. Yeah, I was a musician. I love octaves, you know. Octaves are my friends. So I'm hitting that seventh and beyond. That's what I'm shooting for in this lifetime. I think I'll get there. You guys, do you guys have a personal belief that you can do that in this lifetime with this material, that you can find the path to this energy of unity, or have you found it? You know, it brings you to this higher place, you know. I mean, a lot of people meditate. A lot of people talk about the things that they see or experience while meditating that is far outside of their normal life, you know. But if you work to find in your heart and mind and in your base this unity, you know, and believe that you become a part of it, it opens up a lot of doors. It does. That's just me. Yeah, do you guys believe, and it's a personal question, that you can reach a higher density in this lifetime? I guess I'll start with Gary first this time. Or have you?
Reach a higher density. Do I believe? Let me think on that for a second. Okay. No, I don't think that, as if I understand your question correctly, that I can reach a higher, like, I'm not going to do work sufficient that's going to put me in, say, the fifth density or sixth density or seventh density. I didn't quite consider that before. But my goal is to serve, is to learn to love, mm-hmm. to learn to heal and to forgive. And then wherever I may wind up, after I leave this lifetime, whether I have successfully learned the lessons of this density and I move on to the next one, or if I am indeed a wanderer and I return home to a higher density, or if I'm just like such a star student of spiritual evolution that they slot me in the sixth density, you know, whatever the case may be, then those cards will fall as they may. If that makes sense.
See, I think you're already there. Your modesty gives you away. it does, you know. It says a lot. Where you? Because you're not the kind of guy who'll say it. I'll say it for you. I think you're already there. But this harvest will be great. You know, when we're done here, the harvest will be awesome. Austin?
There are passages in the raw material that kind of hint at the ability to surpass certain things. It's full of jargon, but they say that the activation while in yellow ray, that's where we are, of violet ray intelligent infinity is a passport to the next octave of experience. There are different interpretations of what that might mean, but you could say that maybe it's possible that you could get to a point right now in this experience that we sort of transcend to something beyond what we understand is our evolution. But I think a key point for me in understanding the densities and this process of evolution is that we exist in a universe that is fractal in nature, meaning that there are microcosms and macrocosms that mirror each other. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about this evolution through the densities, it might seem like a far-off thing. Like we can say the fifth density is millions of years away, but when we talk about it, it can still be relevant to what we experience now because we are experiencing a microcosm of that grander macrocosmic evolution. And so what we experience here and now can still have the attributes of what we will experience in the grander sense. And in that sense, I do think that there are experiences available to us that can mirror these higher densities and that it's still useful to learn about these higher densities because it gives context to where we are and we can apply it to our own lessons that we're learning in this life. And in that sense, I do think it's very possible to evolve to something that's a mirror of those densities, at least.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm an optimist. I absolutely believe we can reach that in our lifetime if we work toward it. You know, it's not like this law of attraction thing, especially the American version, where all you have to do is sit there and believe you've already done it. You know, no, you do the work. You do the damn work. You know, but at the same time, I also think that the power of our intent is so far beyond what anybody's ever told us. We've seen people heal themselves from stage 4 cancers or paralysis, you know, because they willed it, because they intended it, and they found the right path. You guys found yourself in a higher place suddenly at some point in your life, and you just knew that you were at this higher place, and the higher place came to you. You absolutely belong with LL Research and what you're doing. LL Research is graced to have both of you, you know, and I know you're modest and everything. So, you know, I'll be the complimentary hyperbolic one. You know, I think that you've done fantastic work. You can see the evidence of it, you know, as the organization has built up and built up. And, you know, books that talk deeper about the experiences of, you know, these sessions or, you know, new channelings. Speaking of which, there are passages from, and correct me if I get this wrong, an entity named Quo, which seem to be more current. Can you tell us about those? Either one. I guess Austin first on this.
Yeah, sure. Subsequent to the Raw Contact, the Raw Contact ended at the passing of Don Elkins because they needed the trio of energies between Don, Carla, and Jim for Ra to come through. And so without Don in the picture, they couldn't channel Ra anymore. But previously, they'd been channeling other entities, Hatan, Latui, and others like Latos and things like that. And so they went, they'd always channeled consciously even during the Ra contact, but they had to go back to just channeling consciously subsequently. And eventually they started channeling an entity that called itself Kuo. And they didn't ask who Kuo was at first, but eventually when they did ask who Kuo was, it turns out that Kuo was a combination of some of these entities, being Hatan, which is a fourth density social memory complex, Latui, which is a fifth density, and then actually Ra, who is the sixth density. And while they couldn't channel Ra in the same way that they had before in the trance channeling, which is very different from the what we call conscious channeling.
Right, right.
It's a way for Ra to sort of step down and still contribute to the channeling without having to go through that very strict, rigorous trance process. And so channeling Kuo and other entities has continued to this day. We still channel usually on a bi-monthly basis, every other week. We're currently on hiatus because, as you said earlier in the show, Jim is busy caring for an ailing friend at the moment.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful thing.
So we are still channeling Kuo basically every other week. We have each session gets transcribed and put up onto the website that you can read for free. We have an archive going all the way back to 1974, I believe.
Wow. So Kuo kind of enhances the law of one talk, or does he even go there?
It's basically any manner of spiritual question that anybody brings to the circle where we're channeling. We try to make sure that all questions remain focused on what we would consider eternal spiritual principles or relevant to spiritual evolution. We try to stay away from things that might speak to more transient topics like when is this event going to happen, or things that might not be relevant in, you know, 1,000 years. We try to stay away from that. We try to maintain a focus on those things that will be relevant for anybody at any stage of their journey, whether it's now or 1,000 years from now.
Yeah, that event, you know, it's different things to different people. Some it's a destructive force, some it's an incredibly enlightening force. But to all, it's almost, you know, conspiratorial and fear-monger based. So I kind of dismiss it, you know. Hey, yeah. If something's going to happen, bring it on. I'll experience it how I experience it, you know, but I'll have love in my heart. That's all I got to say about that, you know. So I don't know. Do you guys have any idea what that event is? Just for gossipy things, or is it different things to different people? To you. Boy, that's a tough question. Anyway,
go ahead, Gary.
Radio silence. Radio silence.
You talk in terms of the event.
The event,
The harvest, I mean, specifically? Is that?
No, not the harvest. You said the event. You know, people always talk about the event. The event is coming. Well, what the hell is it? You know? Oh. I thought it was the shift in December 12th. 20, you know, I mean, what the hell is it? Some people say, you know what, it's a solar flare that's massive and it's going to knock out the electricity around the planet for decades. And we're going to have to learn to live off the land again. Yeah, good luck with that. And, you know, we're going to have to be compassionate to each other or we're all going to starve and die. So we're forced to learn compassion. Boy, bring that on, man. That sounds scary as hell. Forget it, man. I don't want that one. How about the event where just it rains higher vibrational energy and everybody just is all of a sudden loving, you know? And yeah, that would work if there was a conspiracy theory behind it, you know? The deep state is going to force everybody to love each other, you know? QAnon is calling for it. And, you know, no thank you. See, I'm not a conspiracy guy. I'm sorry. Conspiracy requires a lot of people on the same wavelength, and that just doesn't happen. A collective consciousness, on the other hand, to be more loving can work. But you get selfish people involved in selfish things and everybody has their own selfish purpose, the conspiracy is going to break apart. I don't trust conspiracy. They require too many selfish people. Forget it. Sorry about that, Rand. Okay, we got like 5 minutes left. Three, really. Oh, no, that's right. My computer's fast. But please tell us really about the website, about the research, about the information, where people can find it, where people can find more about you guys. You know, it could be all one thing, but maybe you have lots of different things. So where can we learn more about Gary Bean, Austin Bridges, Jim McCarty, LL Research, LLResearch.org, and all the work and all the research?
Thanks for asking the question. And I would reply firstly by saying that it's not us that we want to be front and center for the seeker. We want to direct their attention to the material. And certainly if they're interested in learning about us, by all means. So you said where, and the website, the main website is llresearch.org, all one word. And as Austin was describing, LL Research gives away everything it's ever produced virtually for mm-hmm. free on its archive website. And that right. was the policy of Don and Carla back to
right.
the
I mean, 70s. Who does that? Yeah, that's an 80s consciousness right there, man. Let's give it away so people can read it. That's a beautiful thing. I mean, that's rare. That's rare as anything. But it speaks to the people. It speaks to the law of one. It speaks to the purpose of LLResearch.org. And sorry, I'll shut up now. That,
I really actually dig listening to you, so feel free.
Thank
to,
you. Anytime. See, we're best friends, man. We're going to hang out sometime. Road trip.
So as I was describing earlier, there's a respect for the free will of each seeker and, you know, their own intelligence and their own need to find truth for themselves. Like, we don't know what is true for you or anybody, really. So LL Research, this, let me step back, the spirit within which LL Research offers this material is one of dispassion. You know, we offer...
There's no catch. All right. You have to do is read it. You like it or you don't. There's no catch. It's there for you.
Yeah,
so it will resonate with wanderers, light workers.
If it works for you, then run with it. And if it doesn't, then like we wish you all the best in finding what does speak to you where you are at in your own journey. Mm-hmm. But for those who do light up and reply to this philosophy, like Austin and I do, obviously we're – and like you said, you do – we make it available, and there's, I think, 14, 15 publications. There's also about 15 translations as of last week,
right.
Transcripts that go back to 1974. And, yeah, everything we have on the archive website. And then we also have a community website with the forums for people who are studying this material who would like to connect with others from around the world, because people who resonate with this material are – compose a very small demographic, and you know, this is, as
it's
Jim likes
bigger,
to say,
though.
Interest is increasing, and as Jim likes to say, it's the law of one is somewhere between obscure and unknown.
Now, is the community site available by going to LLResearch.org, or is it a different address?
Yeah, one can navigate that way, but it's the URL is bringforth, where four is the number four, bringforth.org.
Bring forth with the number four, bringforth.org. Yeah. That's beautiful. You guys on Facebook or Twitter or any social media?
Have a Facebook, facebook.com/LLResearch, and we have a Twitter account. There's an underscore in there or something, but you can
LL
find us.
LL underscore research.
Okay, thanks.
And then an Instagram, too.
Oh, no kidding. So you can see pictures of you guys. Cool.
Not us.
Do me a favor. Please send my love to Jim, you know? Jim, he talks about his marriage to Carla. He reminds me of my wife and I, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of love there. And he sounds like such a beautiful and genuine person. I mean, anybody who can't make it because he got a sick or nursing friend is beautiful in my book, you know.
Yeah, he really wanted to be here. He loves talking about the Law of One and just sharing with people. And he's really sorry that he couldn't make it today.
Well, you know what? We'll have you guys on again, and we'll bring Jim on. I hope you're willing to come back. We'd love to have you guys back. And we could talk about that. Hopefully you guys can stick with us once the show is over. We can continue our talk for a couple of minutes before my wife gives me the evil eye, you know, because she always does. It's a thing. I'm in the doghouse so much I put a Nintendo in it, you know. Anyway, Gary Bean and Austin Bridges from LL Research. LLResearch.org is the site for everything, all that information, and Facebook, Twitter with the underscore, we'll have all this information on the archive, and the Law of One. You know, get a chance, read the raw materials, and, you know, it'll resonate with you or it won't. But it's changed my life for the better, and so have these guys. Join us next week at this time. Our guest will be Dee Mucciwini Collin from the New York City Paranormal Group. And you can only imagine the energy in New York City. So we're going back to our paranormal roots next week, now that our out-of-this-world spectrum here has ended. If you're listening to us on WCET.FM, latenightinthemidlands.com, don't touch that dial. Next up is the great Michael Vera with Late Night in the Midlands. If you're hearing us on United Public Radio Network at uprntalkradio.com on a beautiful weekend, they save all the extravagant programming for the weekend, so whatever they're playing next is going to be very cool. So either way, don't touch that dial. Please make sure you subscribe or donate to this network, please. we could use the help. Join us again next week for Kindness Beyond the Veil. This is Chip Reichenthal thanking Tim Roxbury, our great producer and host of the show Supernatural Realm, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, right here. So don't touch that dial. Thank you for listening. We love you, beloved listeners. We'll see you next week. Take care.